Boom.
If you thought 4 hours a day, 1,200 minutes a week was enough, think again. He's the last remnants of the old republic. A sole bastion of fairness. He treats crackheads in the ghetto gutter the same as the rich pill poppers in the penthouse.
Wow.
The clearinghouse of hot takes break free for something special. The fifth hour with Ben Maller starts right now.
In the air, everywhere. Back at it on a Friday. Halloween season is upon us. There's a coolness in the air, and the fifth hour with me, Ben Maller, is in the air everywhere, as we said, 8 days a week, because 4 hours a night are not enough. Back in the podcast studio at a secret location in the Northwoods, and I am not going to do a bunch of small talk here. I'm going to get right to it, because there's a man standing by right now on the phone that is responsible for putting this podcast studio together. I'm sure we'll get to that at some point. A man that knows the early days of me at Fox Sports Radio, Jake Warner, a member of the Maller Militia, my engineer on the old Weekend Overnight Show for many years, worked with me on the weekday show. He's a Renaissance man. He is the lead engineer for the Los Angeles Clippers, my favorite NBA team. He is the lead engineer for the LA Kings, my favorite hockey team. He worked for the LA Dodgers, my favorite baseball team, as an audio engineer. He traveled the United States with the great Vin Scully and all the legends of the Dodgers. Traveled the world with those guys for many, many years. He's a podcaster, as I mentioned. He's got the Big Brother Jake podcast. And he's a girl dad. He's very active on social media. There's a lot going on with this guy. And so let's give it up now to Jake Warner. Stay awake with Jake. And Jake, I have been doing this dopey podcast for several years now. I can't believe it's been several years. Why have I not had you on the podcast?
Ben, I think it's because, you know, I decided to leave the show and you held that against me. And now you don't want me as a part of anything. But, you know, I'll do it. I love being around you, Ben. I always want to be around you. I always want to do whatever it takes to make you happy, Ben. And I'm glad to be on the fifth hour.
Well, no. See, no, I appreciate that, Jake. And, you know, I loved doing the show with you. And remember, I did not want you to leave. When you originally left the first time, I didn't want you to leave. And then the second time, I didn't want you to leave. And so I just want that on the record now. And as I have on, I try to have all my friends on who worked at FSR back in the day. So how are the Alumni Association meetings? Are those going well?
The meetings are fine. You know, we all try to make ourselves available to Fox Sports Radio when possible. I have not been asked to be president of that Alumni Association as of yet, but I am an active member.
Yeah. Well, and I saw, I ran into Tom Looney the other night at Dodger Stadium.
I saw that.
Yeah. So I ran into Looney, and he's, of course, the founding member of the FSR Alumni Association. He, even before he got hired at the company, and then once he got hired, he knew eventually he would be part of the Alumni Association. And that's why I have all the members on, as many as I can, Jake, because I also will at some point be a member of the FSR Alumni Association. But I've been able to last a while, but I will be coming and I will be paying my dues to those meetings. That's going to happen, Jake. It's going
to
happen.
Yeah, you need to. Yeah, there is a due. There's a, you know, membership dues, but you know, sometimes you can get the golden ticket like you give away at your show, you know, and not have to pay those dues. But I'm one of those people. I just don't tell them.
Yeah, no, I'm really bad with dates. I think everyone is around my age. I always do, even when they're a lot older or a lot younger. I just assume people are kind of around my age. And I'm bad, as I said, with dates. So when did you start at Fox Sports Radio? I remember in the early days, you were there pretty early on at Fox Sports Radio. And then you went to work with the Dodgers, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But when did you begin? You remember like roughly what year it was?
Yeah, I believe it was the year 2000. I started, I believe it was August of 2000. I know it was like 2 weeks after the network started. is when I showed up.
Okay.
And they put me on overnight weekend, and that's how we ended up meeting up. I was a board op for, oh my goodness, who was I board oping for at that point? There's so many people. Steve Mason, I believe it was. And yeah, that was a little rocky.
Yeah.
But yeah, that didn't end well. But you know, I was very opinionated at that time. I think I was a little more rough around the edges and didn't take as much crap from anybody at that time in my life. But I've since calmed down. But that's when I started around that time.
Yeah.
And it grew to be a full-time gig, and I worked for damn near everybody on the network at that point.
Yeah, and there's not many left, right? At that, I mean, that's a long,
right.
long time ago. And I were you the board op, the Steve Mason, who's now, for those that have lost track, he does a show in L.A. still, and are they on an afternoon drive? I don't know. Mason and Ireland been on forever.
I guess so, yeah, sure.
Yeah. So, I don't know. They're on some day part during the day when I'm sleeping, they're on or whatever, fine. But anyway, there was a Steve Mason show, and I actually brought this up to Mason a couple years ago. He had Jim Bowden on, but he thought it was Jim Bowden.
Oh yes, I was working the board when
okay.
that happened.
Okay,
what are you talking about?
Yeah. This is one of the great bloopers in the history of Fox Sports Radio. And I don't know if Steve's upset I'm bringing this up, but it's 20 years ago. I think the statute of limitations has run out, right, Jake? On this,
oh, yeah, totally. It's 100% ran out. Yes.
Yeah. So I remember I was there that night too. So we were both there, and we both witnessed.
We were both there.
Yeah, it was an amazing. It was an amazing interview because I've had this happen to me, but it wasn't ever as awkward as this. So Mason was interviewing what he thought was Jim Bowden, the guy that wrote the book Ball Four, right? Wasn't he the guy from the book? And if you're unfamiliar with the book Ball Four, it was a legendary book about all the kind of debauchery that the Yankees, this guy, he documented all the things that the guys were doing for one season, right? I think it was he was on the Seattle Pilots, I think, and then he went to the Yankees, if I remember correctly. Anyway, I don't know all the details. I'm just talking out of my tush here. But I know the book was about all the nonsense that the guys were doing off the field. And, I think the big thing on that book was the wife swapping.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, so Mason, again, he didn't realize he was talking to that guy. He thought he was talking to Jim Bowden. Who was the general manager of the Cincinnati Reds at the time, I think it was?
At the time, yep, it was Cincinnati Reds, yep.
Yeah. So anyway, Mason's doing the interview, and he thinks he's talking to, guy A, and he's talking to guy B, that didn't go so well. And but then Bowden, who's I think he passed away a couple years ago, but a total jokester.
Yeah.
Total jokester. And
totally went with it.
Yeah, and he starts
starts
talking like he realizes Mason doesn't realize who he is. And so he starts giving these outrageous answers. Remember, with every question, if I remember correctly, like every answer got more ridiculous.
Right.
Yeah.
It was getting crazier and crazier. And I remember the producer's name was Josh Rimmer. His dad actually is TV guy for the Columbus Blue Jackets in the NHL. And he's the one that was producing that night. And I said, Josh, I don't think this is who you think it is. I knew right away. I was like, he's answering these questions a little too weird. This isn't right. He's like, no, it's him. I'm like, I think you got the wrong guy. And in the talk back to us, this totally isn't who I think it is.
Yeah.
Everyone picked up on it. So even though it was a joke, Mason picked up on it, and then he starts going with it too. It was just a weird set of events after that, man. But yeah, I remember that night clear as day. Totally.
Yeah,
I was there for that.
That was one of the funny stories that in those days in Fox Sports Radio. And I think Bowden had Ken Griffey Jr. was on the Reds at the time, and I think he had him traded. I think, if I remember correctly, there was something with Griffey that had come up in that time period. So I remember you were with me on the weekend overnights early on. And remember when the network started, there was no weekend overnight show. When I started, they had put tape programming on the overnights. And then I was given the weekend overnight show, and we were on no affiliates. There was hardly anyone listening, and it was pretty much just throwing stuff against the wall at that particular point in the early days. And we were on, in, if I remember, the early affiliates were like Binghamton, New York, Pittsburgh.
It was our first affiliate. Yep, Pittsburgh, yep.
Yeah, there were like a few random scattered affiliates. But no, it was kind of like a private conversation, right, Jake? No one was listening at that time.
It was just us talking with the mics on, and people just happened to listen, you know. But Binghamton, New York was always representing, you know. That and the one commercial we always used to play, House Cat.
Yes.
Remember that?
Yes, yes.
It never left me.
Everyone.
House Cat. Yeah, it never left me. It haunted me. My dead air dreams, I still hear that damn song. But those were fun days because we could do anything we wanted and nobody was listening upstairs.
Yeah.
They're all asleep or on their, you know, at their vacation homes or their yachts because, you know, they were making the big money and we were over there slumming in the studio. But that was a lot of fun. We got away with a lot of stuff and stuff we couldn't do nowadays. And that's what made it a lot of fun. And, you know, before I became friends with you, I was always a fan of yours. You know, living in the L.A. area, listening to you and Dave Smith on Extra Sports 1150. See, I was a P1 back then. And I was listening. I'd listen every day. And I and still hear the laugh track that you guys would play after everything you said. but I loved the show. And then when I found out you were coming over, I was like, cool. And then I found out I was going to work with you. And we both were big fans of Jim Healy here in L.A., and, you know, so it's like, hey, if you got sound effects, play them, you know, dig up all the old, you know, funny stuff with Tommy Lasorda. And I was like, man, I'm right there with you. So I would kind of just gauge where you were going with certain things, and I would be able to play something right when I just saw your eyes, you know, like with you or where you wanted or the affliction of your voice, I knew what you wanted. And so that actually helped me grow, and I had a good time. It taught me how to, a lot about radio, you know, behind the scenes. But you allowed me a lot of creative freedom, and that's what made it fun. It was a lot of fun working.
Yeah, I loved it, Jake. And people ask about the show, and I did goofy stuff. Back in the 90s, we got away with a lot of stuff, and before I even got to Fox Sports Radio, radio was much different. People were not all uptight. You could goof around, and you know, people were fine with it. Now people – and I think most people are still okay with it, but there's just enough people that complain that it's not the same. But – yeah, when we were on the weekend overnights and people ask about the Maller Militia and all that stuff, that all started on the weekend overnights because we started picking up more radio stations as the network started to grow and more people kind of heard the show and got the show. And but we just would look for anyone. I remember that when people would call up, we were shocked that anyone called up because we weren't on anywhere. So why? And then we would just start blabbing with people, and that's how we the show kind of morphed into we Jeannie and Medford and some of the people. Doc, Mike, you were there when Doc started calling the show. And that I'm trying to think of the early call. We had Doc, Mike. Cowboy's been calling forever. He still calls me.
Yeah, Cowboy and Windsor. Oh, he still calls.
Yeah. Yeah, he still.
That guy, nothing would shake him, man. I would play so many crazy sound effects and try to throw him off, and he was so dedicated. And he used to make me mad. I think I got him one time. And when I did, like, I made sure the whole world knew I was happy about it.
Yeah, well, and that's great because you can explain, Jake, as the producer engineer, what led to we had Cowboys Corner, and then over time it morphed into just playing a bunch of sound effects while Cowboy drones on about who died this week in sports and what his junior high school teacher told him when he was, you know, he was late to school one day. Like all that stuff, the magic of Cowboy John Brad, but he was pretty monotone, right? I mean, he's always been monotone. And so
very monotone. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It was kind of weird. But I wanted to throw him off because, like, you would kind of be funny. Well, you're always funny to me, but, like, you would be funny and, like, talk, like, over him to the audience, and he would never pick it up. So I'm like, well, if Ben is talking over him and he doesn't pick it up, I would try and throw him off. So I would play sound effects. You know, I'd hear certain things he would say and try to find, like, the sound effects that would match it, and it would throw him off. So my goal after that was to make sure I could break him. And I think thousands, you know, thousands of calls that I sat in and did the show night after night. One time I got them. And I think it was like a screaming lady or something, or, you know, some crazy drop. And he just stopped and he kind of chuckled. I'm like, I got him.
Got him.
Got him.
Yeah.
I
am stunned, Jay. I am stunned that he still calls after all these years. He had a stroke. He's had COVID. Like, I know the whole Cowboy story. I know all the ailments he's had. I remember when he was on the CBC in Canada, did a story about him. They called him the handsome hoarder. I think it was, or he called himself the handsome hoarder. And the Canadian government had to, like, take him out of his home in Windsor, because he had so much, like, stuff, newspapers that he had piled up, and he was living in squalor. But he always found a way to call the show, until at one point he stopped for a while because he didn't have phone service. I guess because the phone got cut off. He had so much stuff, but it was crazy. And then some of the other calls. Pete in Pittsburgh was also there in the early days.
Oh, yeah, he's another one, yeah.
Knucklehead.
You know, and then his head got big because, you know, it started going on Howard Stern. You know, so he thought it was too good to call the Ben Maller show. And I'm like, bro, you're Pete in Pittsburgh. Nobody gives a rat's ass who the hell you are. And we used to battle on Twitter all the time until one day he was just like, hey, man, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be mean to you. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Pete, yeah, exactly. Pete became one of Stern's whack pack guys. And he called us before he called Stern, and Stern used to put him on. I will give Pete credit, though. When I got whacked from Fox Sports Radio in 2009, and I was like bummed out, and I was like, this sucks. Pete in Pittsburgh called the Howard Stern show and dropped my name and talked to Howard about me, because a bunch of people got laid off and let go at that time. Mm-hmm. And so I appreciate Pete, because I didn't hear it live. But I have a lot of relatives that were, you know, big Stern fans and still are big Stern fans. And so they heard my name and they're like, wait a minute, were they talking about you? And so that was pretty cool. Pete does not call anymore. I did reach out to Pete in Pittsburgh somewhat recently, about coming on the podcast. I thought I would shoot the shit with him, Jake, on the podcast.
Right. Oh, we can say shit on this podcast.
Yes, okay, cool. yes, we are allowed. It's the reason I do the podcast, Jake. You can say naughty words you can't say on radio. So, but no, Pete, I was like, hey, Pete, come on the show. And I called Pete up. It was kind of late at night. He's in Pittsburgh. He is stinking drunk. He says he's walking on the side of the highway there in Pittsburgh, just kind of wandering around. He starts screaming my name. He was not in good shape, Jake. He was not in good shape. Now, I hope that was just a bad night and things are better for Pete, but he was not doing particularly well that night. Here's another blast in the past, Jake, and these are all names that the listener might not realize. If you're listening to this podcast, like, I don't know who that is. But these are calls. We had Troy the Gambling Man, who was...
I remember him, yes.
Yeah, Troy drove a sweeper truck around Nashville. And again, Jake, the point of all this, we put these people on, right? Because I was just looking for people, anybody that called up, we want to hear their story, wanted to have some fun, you know, change it up a little bit. And so that's what happened. And he would call up and give the worst gambling picks of all time. And he was a terrible gambler at handicapping NFL games, but he's like, well, you know, he thought he was great. And that's the thing that made the bit. He thought he was really good. And he was not. But anyway, so you left FSR, Jake. It's all, we got to get back to you, Jake. This is all about you. So you left FSR and you got one of the great jobs in broadcasting. You got to work for the Los Angeles Dodgers and travel the United States and the world with Dodger baseball. And that was a great, wonderful game. What's the coolest thing you got to experience when you were traveling with the Dodgers?
Oh, man, there's so many things, Ben. So many things I got to do. One of the coolest things was I'll tell this story. I told it on my podcast, which is the Big Brother Jake podcast, by the way.
I see what you did there.
Well, on all streaming platforms.
How dare you? How dare you?
You know I'm going to get it in.
The coolest moment,
I mean, of course, seeing all the historic ballparks, and luckily, in my tenure there, I got to go to, like, Fenway, and I got to go to Wrigley, you know, and all the great ballparks. But my favorite memory of working for the Dodgers, it was 2004. It was the game before last game of the year against the Giants, and it was for the division. And it was when Steve Finley hit that grand slam to beat the Giants and take the division that day. Vin Scully was doing radio only. It was just Vin and I in the booth. Producer Tom Bowman was downstairs ready for the champagne. Rick Monday was already downstairs. Ross Porter was downstairs. Everybody's downstairs. So it's just Vin and I. As soon as Steve Finley hit the ball, Vin lost the ball. I saw the ball. So in the call clear as day, it's way back and wherever it is, he looks at me and I'm doing the home run signal to him. He's like, wherever it is, it's a souvenir. Grand slam home run. Then he laid out. Turn his mic off, turn around, look back at me, said, Jake, Mike Shannon's in St. Louis when we get there on me. Thank you for saving my bacon. Went right back to announcing like nothing happened.
That's awesome. That's great. You helped the great Vin Scully on a home run call. That's awesome.
Yes.
That's wonderful. When now Vin, was that the last year he did radio only? Because he didn't do that, right? It was a simulcast off the TV for a while at the last few years that he did it, right? He didn't just do the radio. I don't think he did radio only at all after, like, was it?
No. You know, the only time he do radio only is in the playoffs, of course.
Yeah.
But his last game was a regular season game against the Giants in San Francisco, and that's how he wanted to end it. So he, pretty much after that, like, he didn't do any just, like, radio only broadcasts.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when I first started years ago in the mid 90s, he would do radio when the games weren't on TV because not every game was on TV. And
it was
one of my favorite memories. The Dodgers were in New York at Shea Stadium. And you know what a crappy press box.
Oh, Shea man. I almost got electrocuted there.
Yeah. It was horrible.
True story.
Yeah. No, it was a horrible ballpark. I can't believe that was a New York City ballpark that was newer.
Right.
You know, at the time they built it, it was the model ballpark, supposedly. It was a dump. But, right. But it was a day game, very hot, humid in New York and in the summertime in like August. Dodgers always used to go in August in those days. And so, Vin was doing radio only, and we were in shorts. He had they gave him some Dodgers shorts, and he had a T-shirt on. And it was the wildest thing to see the great Vin Scully and just going casual.
That's
awesome. Yeah, you know, because he always
awesome.
You were around him all the time. He's always dressed up and looking good. And
oh yeah, if you saw him dressed down, the only time what he would wear dressed down was a polo shirt and slacks. That was being dressed down for him. To me, that's being dressed up.
Yeah,
that's like fancy duds for me, because you know the reason why I got in the radio is so I didn't have to wear a suit, you know. And I do have another crazy Vin Scully story.
Oh, give it to me. I love any Vin Scully story. I want to hear.
He actually saved my life, and this is a true story. The very first time I met Vin in a professional capacity, because I had met him being in the press box, you know, he says hi and,
yeah,
you know, and that was the extent, and I was already like, I could die now. But the first time I got to actually talk with him, we were in Mexico City in 2003. It was a spring training series against the Mets. And we went to a soccer stadium to work. And it was like, you know, in Mexico City, the elevation's higher than Denver. So it's like 7,000 feet. I'm asthmatic. There's no elevators. And being an engineer, you have to, like, lug all this equipment, you know. So on my third trip up, I'm dying. It's hot, and I get right to the booth where we work. Bam! I collapse, face first, onto the floor, hurt myself.
Wow!
And I blacked out. The next thing I feel is cold water going down my neck, and are you okay? I was like, did I just hear Vince Scully's voice? I died. I'm in heaven, and Vince, you're narrating my death. He poured water on my neck. He's rubbing my back, and he's like, I saw you fall, and it scared me. Are you okay? You must be Jake. And I was like, and I don't do a good impersonation, I know, but I was like, holy shit. Yeah. You've been Scully. And he starts laughing. And ever since then, we had a really cool relationship. And, you know, so so he would always say, hey, we're in Denver. You better take it easy. I don't have any cold water. And I'm like, you're funny. You know, but.
And Vin probably at the time is like, holy cannoli, this guy's going to die in front of me. What am I going to do here? Right? He's probably thinking, wait a minute, you know, I got to do something. You can imagine how that's going to play. Dodgers go to Mexico City and, you know, engineer Jake Warner, you know, something happens and in the booth and Vin's right there. Oh, man, that would have been a big deal. That would have been crazy.
Yeah, it would have been news, you know, especially being in Mexico City. Yeah. But that was another thing that was cool, and I think one plane ride, he usually sat in first class, and then there was like broadcasters, team staff, and then the players were in the back, and Ross Porter would always try to sit next to him, like all the time, and but in this particular moment, I got on the plane. I think we were heading either Denver. It had to be a West Coast city because Vin never went past Denver at that time.
Yeah.
And he was like, hey, have a seat. I'm like, oh, so maybe I'm just sitting there before the flight takes off and I go in the back. And I was like, let me put my stuff in the back, good, and I'll come back. He's like, no, sit here with me. I was like, really? I was like, well, Billy DeLurie, the old traveling secretary, God bless him, he usually sat by Vin or it was Ross Porter. But Billy didn't make that trip, and Ross was looking at me, and they just gave him another seat. So for 3 hours, I got to sit with Vin and just talk about Jackie Robinson. And his days with, you know, starting out with the Dodgers. And that was something, I wish I had a tape recorder for that conversation. That was so much
That's
fun,
awesome.
Man.
Yeah. And Billy DeLeary, you mentioned Billy DeLeary also. He was with the team in Brooklyn, right? Wasn't he with the team?
Yes.
Yeah. He went back to the Brooklyn Dodger day. He was there. Very, the skinniest man I ever came across in my life.
Yeah. Like a small was extra large to him. You know, I think his social security number was 1. That guy, I love Billy because he didn't take shit from nobody. He didn't care who you were, you know, but he always looked out for me when I needed something. Like, hey, Billy, I need tickets for tonight. I got you, young man. He can never memorize a name for shit.
No.
But he would always take care of me. And God bless his soul. He was one of the great people. And of course, we had like, the great Stu Nahan, God bless his soul as well.
Yeah.
Traveling with, watching Vin and Stu Nahan talk together, that was pure comedy. Loved it. Oh, those, the best couple seasons of my life. The highlight of my career. Working with the Dodgers, man.
Yeah.
Loved it. Well, every minute.
And Billy DeLeary, you know, hard edge, kind of Brooklyn guy, thin guy, as you said.
Yes.
And when I first started doing stuff with the Dodgers, and I would make the East Coast trip because my brother lived in New York, so I'd go back there, and I could see him. And then when I first started going, I don't know if this happened when you were there. There were these old dudes that would hang out in front of the hotel that were like Brooklyn Dodger. They were kids when the Dodgers were playing in Brooklyn, and they'd show up. They were like the Brooklyn Dodger fan club, and they'd hang out outside the hotel to get photos and autographs, and it was. It was crazy. I don't know. There can't be many of those guys left, right? At this point, probably not. But
No. I mean, just being in Vero Beach, and I know this is so sinister, but it's perfect for the fifth hour. Like, we'd be sitting in the booth in Dodger Town, and we'd hear an ambulance, and we would say, oh, no, we might have lost another Brooklyn Dodger.
Oh, no. How dare
I'm so going to hell for that. But, I mean, so there and everyone in the stands, it was all gray and blue hair. You know, rarely you see somebody my age at Dodger Town, you know, but.
Well, I've told this story before, Jake, on the podcast. You'll appreciate this. I don't know. Maybe I told it to you also on the when I did your podcast.
Probably.
The Big Brother Jake podcast. But my Tommy Hawkins story with Vero Beach, when we showed up to Vero Beach and it was a big deal, spring training, Dodger spring training. I'd heard so much about Vero Beach, and this is great, this old school training facility they had been in since they were in Brooklyn. So I show up there, and you know, I'm a single guy. We're doing the Ben and Dave show back to L.A., and Tommy Hawkins, one of the nicest people. Rest in peace, Tommy Hawkins. The greatest people of all time.
Great guy.
Yeah, played with the Lakers when they came from Minneapolis and told some amazing stories about that. And just one of the nicest human beings. So go up to Tommy. I'm like, hey, Tommy, you know, where do we want to go out? You know, we have a night off in Vero. We want to go out, you know, maybe, you know, meet a nice young lady. And I don't think we phrased it quite that way, Jake. But anyway, so Tommy's like, oh, I got the perfect place for you. I got the perfect place. And he, and I wish I remember the name of it, but it was a bar restaurant. They had like live, like live music, if I remember correctly. And Tommy's like, this is the spot. This is the spot. You're going to go. You have a great time. So I go there, and Dave, the guy, Dave Smith, we go show up. And we walk in there, and hand the guy, Jake, the youngest person in there was like in their early 60s. You know, we're like in our mid-20s. We're like, what the heck? And this was the swinging Vero Beach bar, Jake. This was where the cool, the young people hang out in Vero, was that bar.
I know. I've probably been to all three establishments that were the fine nightlife of Vero Beach.
Yeah. So then we left there, and I think we had to go to another, was it Port St. Lucie? We went somewhere on that.
Port St. Lucie. Yeah.
One of the Highway 1 stops, and we did find a bar that there were a few younger people. The problem was the younger people, the good looking women, were hanging out with the ball players that were in the bar.
Of course,
they wanted nothing to do with us, so that did not work out.
And that's where all the Mets players were, Port St. Lucie. So
exactly. So now, Jake, you helped this podcast studio. You built this podcast studio. This is a product. I'm doing this from the Jake Warner podcast studio deep in the North Woods here, and I want to thank you for that, Jake, because you pointed me in the right direction. I had what I thought was a podcast studio with a crappy microphone and a couple of other things, but it was not broadcast quality. But you being a professional radio engineer and knowing good audio quality, you led me the right direction. Now, I did have to dust off my wallet, Jake, but I want to thank you because you saved it.
And I appreciate it being like, you know, I was trying to tell you, but you laced me. It was cool. I appreciate that. But no, man, it's one of my passions. Podcasting is the big thing now. And, you know, I work for a company called Podcast One. And, you know, I love building studios. I love having fun doing it. And I'm glad that I was able to help. You know, I also helped Eddie Garcia build his studio for his amazing podcast, you know. So, you know, I think I've helped many people at FSR build their podcast studios.
Well, and this is a little cottage industry, Jake. I think you should offer this service to people. You are willing for a nominal fee to help them out to build their podcast studio, to make the podcast dreams come true.
Well, you know, anybody that needs something, you know, hit the boy up. I'm ready. I'm ready to work, you know, any chance I get.
I hear you. You are a hustler, Jake. I give you credit. Now, when you left radio the first time, when you left our show and you went back to your alma mater, right? You got a job at your alma mater. And how long you did that for a little bit, and then you got the radio bug, right? Your lifetime radio. Oh, yeah. It's in your DNA, right? You had to come back.
Oh yeah. You're born into this life. You know it chooses radio. You don't choose radio. Radio chooses you. Okay. And the thing is, I always had my foot in radio. I was doing part time work, but I worked at my alma mater, University of Laverne, for 4 years. And each year got worse than the other. So I was really, like, depressed. Like, I'm not even kidding. Like, I had to take a leave of absence from work because I hated my job so bad. But I had a family to feed, you know? And so, funny story, this is a true story. So as I took some time off, and I was like, you know what? When I get to go camping, which I hate camping. But at the time, my wife at the time, she was like, well, the family wants to go camping. We're going to meet some friends. I'm like, okay. So I told her, I said, after this trip, I'm going back to radio. I can't do this anymore. She's like, I understand. Well, if you find something ideal, I support it. I bullshit you not, Ben. Right before I went up the hill where there's no reception, I get a call from AM57. And it's a person we both know, Brian Blackmore, good friend of ours.
Yeah.
And Brian calls me and says, hey, what's up, fucker? You know, that's how we talk. Like, hey, what's up, man? What you need? And he says, what are you doing right now? I said, I'm about to go up the hill. I'm about to lose you. He's like, wherever you're at, pull over. I'm like, okay. So I pull over to this gas station, literally at the base of the hill. And he says, our engineer literally just quit for the Clippers and the Kings. You know, you got Dodger experience. What do you say? I said, I'll take it.
Done. Sign me up, coach. I'm ready to play. Yeah. Put me in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's like, I didn't even tell you how much to pay. I said, I don't care if it doesn't pay. I'll take it. He's like, seriously? I was like, do I just work the games at Staples Center? Yeah, and a couple at Anaheim. I'll take it. And I literally took it, not even knowing how much it paid. That's how bad I wanted to get back in the radio. And it worked out. We had, you know, comparable, compensation, and it worked out. We crunched the numbers, and, you know, now I'm going on my fourth season with Clipper Nation, and which they've embraced me. And
now Jake, you are you're a historian of the Lakers, but you have come and seen the light, Jake. You have had the come to Clipper Daryl moment here. You've moved over to the dark side with the people's team here. And I love it when I see you send something out on social media, and you are prolific on social media. But when you send a positive message out about the Clippers, that warms my heart, considering I know your past, Jake. And I know, because there is a rule, as I told you, that to work at Fox Sports Radio, you had to be like behind the glass. You had to be like a Laker fan, and that was required, or they wouldn't put you on.
It was Lakers, Raiders, Dodgers.
Yes.
You had to. It was like, you know, if you didn't meet that criteria, then, you know, you weren't allowed to work the board. Producers, they were from out of state, so they were always like different fans. But, you know, that was the prerequisite to be a board op at Fox Sports Radio.
Yeah.
Which I hate the Raiders. I'm a Charger fan. Raiders can kiss my ass. You know, and I'm a Laker fan. And Dodgers for sure. Love the Dodgers. My grandfather, God rest his soul, as soon as I was born, put a Dodger hat on me. Took a picture. Said, nice. He's a Dodger for life. I don't care. You know, so.
Yeah.
And he passed away right before I had a chance to introduce him to Vince Scully. That's his favorite broadcast, you know. So, yeah, man, like, being with the Clippers, especially after last year and witnessing what I witnessed with them, going to the Western Conference Final, I had never, and I worked Kobe's last game, which that was the loudest I've ever heard Staples Center. The second loudest I ever heard of Staples. And I've covered concerts there. I've covered Laker games, Clipper games, Kings games, everything. I was there with the Stanley Cup Final, everything. When the Clippers won against Dallas, was it Dallas or Utah? You know, to go to the, man, that's how messed up my brain is.
Well, they beat Utah, and then they beat Dallas in the first round.
Yeah.
Utah, listen, this is the greatest moment in Clipper history. They beat Dallas the first round, which is not the greatest moment, but beating Utah when Kawhi got hurt.
Okay. So when they beat Utah, and that buzzer went off, I have never, other than the Kobe game, heard Staples Center as loud as it was, and all my friends called me sellout. All my friends were like, you suck. I can't believe you traded over. And Clipper Nation said, listen, we know you're a Laker fan, but you work for the greatest organization in L.A. We accept you into Clipper Nation. So they embraced me. And I think I got like 400 extra follows on Twitter and Instagram from Clipper Nation. Like, you know, I would always kick the fan base down. Oh, that's little brother. That's JV. You guys are renting Staples Center, blah, 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 blah. But these fans are so passionate, and they come in, night out, and cheer for their squad, and they're always so cool. You know, I'm high-fiving people when I'm engineering the great Noah Eagle. You know, people are like, I'm high-fiving the crowd. I'm standing up getting excited. You know, it's crazy to see. And then this is the thing I hate about Laker fans. Laker fans will dress up in their jerseys and come to a Clipper game and cheer against them. Like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life, man. And this comes from a guy that grew up loving the Lakers. It's like, why would you waste your time to go to a Clipper game and boo them in your Laker gear. Clippers getting that money, bro. What are you doing?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I've witnessed a lot of things Laker fans have done to Clipper fans, and that's embarrassing, and it's sad. But, you know, I love the gig. It's a lot of fun. I get to be with Noah Eagle every night, the great Adam Osland that does the pre- and post-game show. And we have a good time. We legit have a good time every night. We laugh. We're there dancing the music. We have a great time. It's a great atmosphere. It's not all stuck up and stuffy like a Laker game would be. And I know I'm going to catch hell for this, Ben, but I don't really give a damn because Clipper Nation has embraced me. I've embraced them, and it's been fun, man. It's a good ride. I don't want it to end. I want to stay there until they kick me out.
Well, and in a couple of years, you're going to be at the Taj Mahal, that arena they're building in Inglewood is going to be insane.
Yeah.
And see, this is what I told you, Jake. You wouldn't listen to me back in the old days. I said the Clippers are the people's team, right? The Lakers are the Hollywood team. It's a whole different vibe at a Laker game versus a Clipper game. And I got to tell you, Noah Eagle, I was a little skeptical. I'm not going to lie, Jake. You know, I was Ralph Lawler guy. When they hired Noah Eagle, and, you know, he's this punk guy out of college, you know. He's good, though. He is really solid as a broadcaster. I guess the apple doesn't fall far from the tree because I know his father, Ian Eagle, is very good on television. But
Ian is a very nice guy. I love Ian. I got to meet him several times. And I'll tell you a story real quick. Ian Eagle came. It was one of the games where they were both working together. And, of course, you know, they did this whole light production piece on it, this, that, and the other. Ian comes up to me, and he goes, "Hey, I just want you to know my son speaks highly of you, and I thank you for looking out for him because, you know, he was, like, new to L.A. He didn't know much about the city, and you embraced him." And I was like, "Oh, thanks." And I said, "I'm a fan of yours, just so you know." And it was like a cool moment, you know. And I was skeptical of Noah because I had never heard of him. And, you know, I was like, I Eagle's kid? Oh, is that why he got the gig? I'll be honest. Like, man,
yeah.
Come on.
Yeah,
but
I was the same way. Yeah,
then I worked with him the first game, and I'm blown away because this kid's so mature. He's like, you know, for being 24 to almost 25, super mature, and fun to be around, knows the game, and he knows everybody. I mean, everybody in the industry. We'll be sitting there, you get like Doris Burke come up to him, "Hey, how you doing, little bird?" Because that's what they call him. You know, Mike Breen will come up to him, Mark Jackson, all these broadcasters from every team. You know, they respect him because of his father, but they also respect him because of his work ethic. The kid, he preps, he does good work, he's amazing on the air, he's engaging, his references are fun. He's just a good guy to be around.
Yeah, no, he's really good, and, you know, that he's going to end up doing he'll be just like his dad. He'll end up doing television, network, TV.
I already told him, I said, "Man, it's nice working with you." He's like, "What do you mean? You quitting?" I said, "Bro, you're going to blow up so big, bigger than your dad. And I'm going to be that guy that said, I was his first radio engineer." He's like, "I'm staying here forever." I was like, "Okay, now I know you're young."
Yeah. No, there's no.
You take them opportunities.
Yeah, yeah. No, he will be doing TV before you know it. Like, full time. Like, I mean, whatever he wants, that guy's going to get. Yeah. So.
I mean, he already won an Emmy for that whole Nickelodeon NFL playoff game in New Orleans. So that won an Emmy, and he was part of that. And he's doing CBS College Football every Saturday now. So, I mean, he's big time. So I was like, "Man, you know," and he stayed with us another couple of years. So I get him at least that much longer, but I don't want to see him go. But he's so good, he's not going to stay. And I'll say it on the fifth hour. I know that's going to happen. I don't want him to go, but, you know.
Yeah.
When you're that good, you're in high demand. But he's amazing to be around. And I'm telling you. The Clippers have been nothing but good to me. It's just been a fantastic experience, better than I thought it would be. And I don't want it to end. I'm looking forward to going to the new arena. And, you know, the Clippers will finally be out of that whole identity thing with L.A. You know, but I don't understand, especially now, the hate that Lakers fans have for Clippers fans. I don't get it. Like, Clippers fans don't care about Lakers fans at all. I'm telling you that from the inside. people are like, yeah, we don't care about the Lakers. You know, we're worried about us. Lakers are rent-free. You know, Clippers are rent-free in the Lakers fans' head. It's crazy to see.
Oh, yeah, they're so upset. And they're like, hey, I'm still getting – they're literally building the arena right now, the new Clipper Arena, which is being paid for by Steve Ballmer in Inglewood, and I'm still getting messages, the Clippers are moving to Seattle or Las Vegas. from Laker historians that are like, oh, no, we've got to get them out of L.A. Yeah. The jealousy. Why would you be jealous? It makes no sense.
I never understood it. You know, back in the day, I was part of that, being a dumbass, you know. But I've had people tell me, I have sources that are telling me that the Clippers are going to Seattle. I'm like, my check stub says Los Angeles Clippers on it. I would know if they were leaving before you are. You know, because then I'd have to look for work. But they ain't going anywhere, man.
No,
they're not going anywhere.
Yeah, they're sticking around. So you've got the podcast, which you've already promoted, Jake. You've already promoted
the
Big Brother Jake podcast. But for those that maybe missed that and weren't paying attention, make the elevator pitch. Now, I was lucky enough to be on your podcast, but make the elevator pitch right now on why a random fifth hour listener, a member of the Maller Militia, who maybe does not remember the Jake Warner era on the show, why should that person tune in to your podcast?
Well, let me tell you. So the Big Brother Jake podcast, powered by Podcast One, of course. The reason why you want to listen to the Big Brother Jake podcast is because I'm such a relatable person to your average Joe. And I'm a single father of three that's gone through divorce, that has had problems with, you know, being a single dad. I've had mental illness. I've had clinically depressed moments in my life. I've also known how to have a good time being a single man. I love sports. I love music. And it's just like talking to one of your friends at the bar. If you're brother, it's like talking to one of your people at the barbershop. We just have a good time on my show. We're like the Jerry Seinfeld show of podcasts. We talk about everything and nothing at the same time. Show's about absolutely nothing. But it's a big party. We have a good time. You know, one of the things I talk about is my hate for Valentine's Day because it's a Hallmark holiday, and people know that. People come for love advice. You know, I mean, being single, it's been very fun for me. I missed out on a lot of being married. But, you know, I'm reliving my Navy days again. That's what we do. We just have a good time. Everything's relatable. If you're going through something, you know, you're a veteran. PTSD. I suffer from PTSD, you know. But if you're, like, wanting to have a good time on a budget, I can tell you how to do that. Like, I talk about all kinds of different life issues, pop culture, sometimes politics. You know, I try to be an escape from politics, but sometimes things happen that are so big you have to, you know, discuss it. So the Big Brother Jake podcast it encompasses everybody. It's inclusive. Everyone's welcome. We all have a good time on the Big Brother Jake podcast. You can find it on all streaming platforms, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, Amazon, everywhere, brother.
Yeah, and Jake, let me tell you, Jake, I'm impressed. And I was on the podcast. Like, there are no women, well, in comparison, that listen to sports talk radio, right? It's a very small. Right. There's a small. We know. I think we know the names of all the women that listen to my show.
Yeah, I think all seven of them. Yeah.
Yes, exactly, and they're very nice women, and we thank them for listening. But your podcast, you have a pretty big following with women, which is surprising. I mean, to me, I'm not ripping you, Jake, but you're a sports radio guy.
You are. I'm just as surprised as you are. My biggest demographic, you know, is inside talk, I know. But, like, my biggest demographic, my biggest listener base is women, middle-aged women, 35 to 54.
Yeah.
And because I'm relatable to these women, because it's like, and I'll tell you a little something. Fellas that are listening, that are single dad, use it to your advantage. Women love to see men taking care of their children. And I'll go out to the mall with my three daughters, and two of them are damn near grown. And these women are like, oh, my God, like, look how cute he is with his kids and his girls. And they love it. They eat it up, bro. And so, you know, I just tell them. And most of the time I'm out with, like, a podcast shirt because I'm trying to promote the brand, you know. And so, like, oh, you have a podcast. I'm like, listen to the podcast. You'll learn more about me and what I do. And then the feedback is great. They tell their friends, and so on and so forth. And it becomes like a phenomenon. So, yes, I'm just as surprised as you that women listen to the podcast as much as they do. And it's been a lot of fun doing it. I've been behind the scenes for 20 years. So to be able to get on a microphone and talk, it's a different animal. Like, damn, everybody does this for like 4 hours a day, every day.
Yeah.
I do it like an hour or two once a week. And I'm like, damn, I got to come up with stuff. But it's a lot of fun. I love that side of the glass. You know, my main love will always be audio engineering and mixing. That's my main love, and producing. But being on, you know, behind on the microphone, it's a lot of fun. And yes, I encourage all the women and men to listen to the Big Letter Day podcast.
yeah, no, and I when I went on, we hopefully we had a lot of the people listen to this podcast. I promoted it, but I hope they tuned in and listened. So
second most listened to episode ever in the show's history.
Look at that, number two.
You.
Number two. We're dropping a deuce right now. We're number two.
Yeah, dropping a
number
deuce.
Two. Absolutely. Yeah,
yeah. And climbing, because my most listened to episode is my 100th episode. But I had like Jerry Springer on there. I had like Kid from Kid and Play, people like that.
You had Jerry Springer on your podcast?
Yeah, he made a quick guest appearance.
Really?
Yeah. I had some friends pull some strings for me that owed me favors from years ago. All of them, hey, I got Dodger tickets. You need some? And they'd ask me for them, and I give it to them. Well, I cast some favors in like 17 years later.
Oh, that's good. And you're still friends with Stephen A., right? You worked with him at Fox Sports Radio.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. We worked together, and I almost actually took a job with him in New York City.
Oh, is that right?
But yeah. I was married. Yeah, I was married at the time. The family was not trying to move to New York, and they didn't want me to commute and come see them 3 days a week. Which I was seeing him 3 days a week working overnights. So I never saw him anyways.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, you would have me Friday, mid-Friday to, you know, early Monday. And they're like, nah. So, but yeah, we still talk. I mean, he had his moments of big-timing me, but then I called him out on it in front of a crowd. And I was like, oh, really? You know, yeah. Like it was his birthday the other day, and I called him real quick. And I was like, I know you're busy. Yeah, I'm on the set of so-and-so stuff. I don't care where you're at. I'll just tell you a dumbass happy birthday. Well, appreciate that, brother. All right, hang on.
You know? Yeah.
Well, but that's kind of how things go now. But it's cool. I get it.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, Steve, I mean, he worked. A lot of people don't even know he worked at Fox Sports Radio. They don't even realize
right.
that
he when worked there two different times.
Yeah. I don't know him, but I, you know, casually, right. I met him. He did a weekend show. His first radio was – he did a show with John Ireland on the weekends. And that was before John Ireland was the Laker play-by-play guy. It was just – I think he was doing sidelines occasionally for the Lakers. But they did a show together on Saturdays. And, yeah, I remember that. And then Stephen A. blew up. He went to ESPN. He blew up. And then he came back. Everyone comes back, Jake. Everyone comes back at one point or another.
They all do. Here's the thing. Stephen A., and I told Stephen A. this to his face – He could thank Tony Bruno and the Best Damn Sports Show for blowing him up. Because, like, Tony Bruno, the great godfather of sports talk radio that we both love dearly.
Yeah.
Good friend of ours. He would have Stephen A. come on the show all the time. You know, because that's when he was writing for the Philadelphia Inquirer. So Stephen A. got to do his articles. Of course, he was in with Allen Iverson. So he used to get a lot of, you know, nice scoopage, as Jay Glazer would say, about things that are going on in the NBA, because he had everybody's ear. Like, Shaq would tell him stuff. Kobe would tell him stuff. And so he blew up off of that. And then when he came back to Fox, you know, I would work with him all the time on different things, because he was just, you know, he wasn't really doing the radio thing, but he was getting better at it. So we would sit hours going over schematics, planning, diction, how to talk, how to do things. And he was very thankful, and that's why to this day we've remained friends, because I looked out for him. And then when he was like, hey man, can you help me put a highlight reel together? So I put a highlight reel together for him, and then all of a sudden I just got signed by ESPN, bro. 7-figure deal, dinner on me when I come to LA. I was like, oh, when you get, I'll be at the airport waiting to catch in my steak and lobster dinner. And I did.
Dinner. That should be. What's the most expensive restaurant in L.A.? You gotta find that. My good. You know how much money your response, Jake. You're a star maker, Jake. That should be your nickname. You're a star maker.
Well, that's the funny thing, man. Like all the interns that worked under me at Fox, I got 3 Emmy winners. So it's like, and a Marconi winner. So it's like, come on, man, what the hell? and here I am. I can't even win the People's Choice Award on PodcastAwards.com. And I had, like, stars, like, you know, advertise and promote and all that. I had star-studded people in the business, you know, and I still couldn't win. I was 27 votes shy.
Yeah. Well, let me know. Next year, tell me about that. Remind me, Jake. We'll put a campaign together to get you the award, okay? We're going to do it.
Well, it really is an honor to be nominated. I've been nominated for 6 awards. I was nominated for a couple for blackpodcastawards.com or something like that. I didn't win that either. You know, I guess because I'm half black. I don't know. I don't get it. But I'm working on it. Look at me being controversial on the 5th hour. I got Ben like, Jake, shut up.
That's the third rail, my man. That's the third rail, Jake. Third rail, my man. Come on, man. Trying to make it through the podcast, Jake. How dare you? Yeah. Well, yeah, I've been in the business a long time, too. The only thing I've gotten food dishes named after me. That's my – I have no awards. No, not even close. I don't even get nominated for awards. But
better, though. That's better. I only have a cookie named after me. That's it.
You have a cookie?
Got, like, chicken. Yes.
Where?
All right, so one of my childhood friends, her name is Jessie Morton. Or Jessie Dallas Child. I forget that she's married with a family. but she has this – this is a cheap plug. She has a cookie company called FabulousTheCookies.com. And she had the Big Brother Jake cookie named after me. It's a chocolate chip with Reese's peanut butter cup in it. And that was an honor for me. I was like, damn, I got a food named after me. Usually when I hear my name, there's curse words that precede it. So, you know, from certain people in my life. But yes, so it's not as cool as being in Kansas City and having some chicken fingers named after you, Ben Maller. You know, I think that's amazing. You know, I strive to be like you one day with now that I go behind the glass to the microphone side and I can get a fan base like the Maller Militia, which I love to death. And they're supportive of the Big Brother Jake podcast, too. You know, all the old school P1s, they're like, man, we miss you. When are you coming back? Like, I don't think they need me back or want me back at this point. But,
well, no, I did. Know. There was a point where I was like trying to get you back, and then you know, it didn't work out. I couldn't, you know, you had something going on.
I wanted to come back, but circumstances wouldn't allow me to come back.
No, I hear you. There's a lot of bureaucracy, Jake. There's a lot of red tape in life. I got to wrap this. I could do another 2 hours with you, Jake, but I must wrap this.
Day, brother.
Exactly, man. Listen, continued success. I'm going to see you at these Clipper games. I'm going to get out there. The Clippers keep changing PR people, so I got to find out who I need to talk to.
I have a new boss every year, but I love him. I'm not missing him. But
yeah, yeah.
Hello. Kind of hard to keep track of sometimes.
Yeah. So I gotta track down who I need to talk to get out there. But I will come out and I will see you here. I'm going back to these games. I've been to these Dodger games and some NFL games and whatnot. So, Jake, good success. And again, the podcast, how can people find the podcast, Jake? How can they tune in and listen to you?
All right. So to find the Big Brother Jake podcast, you can go to podcast1.com. In the search box, you can type in the Big Brother Jake podcast. It pops up. You can do the same with iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, iHeartRadio. You just type in the Big Brother Jake podcast and you can find all of my old episodes. I think I've got 144 episodes under my belt and counting. Not going to stop anytime soon. That's where you can find me. Show some love. Rate and review it, because if you rate and review it, they'll let me keep doing it on podcast one. So, yes, rate and review. I don't care if you hate the show. Just give it some traction.
There you go. Help this man out. Help my friend, the great Jake Ward. Thank you, Jake.
Anytime, Ben. Anytime. It's a pleasure being on your show. And, you know, I would love to come in and do the regular show anytime you want me back, brother. I'm so down.